Hahn played Bach.
You are listening to WHFR Dearborn, and when you've got beautiful music on the radio, it is a beautiful day, no matter what. Thanks for sharing it with us. If you would like to be a part of WHFR Radio beyond enjoying and listening to our beautiful programming, I have an opportunity you might like to consider. It's called underwriting or sponsorship of our WHFR programs. We have been fortunate to have wonderful businesses connect with us by way of supporting financially the programming that we offer, and we would love your business or organization to be a part of this as well.
The following program.
Underwriting on WHFR is truly an easy process. By the way, it's tax deductible and very cost effective. What better way to get your business or organization name out to our wonderful listeners? Let's talk. Give me a call. Further details are available. 313-845-9842. I'm Susan McGraw, General Manager. Love to hear from you.
The following program has been pre-recorded. The views expressed by the participants are not necessarily those of WHFR Radio or Henry Ford Community College. Welcome to We Are Not Alone, where local investigators, as well as world-renowned scientists and ufologists, share their latest evidence in support of the UFO reality. Hi, I'm David Twitchell, and you are listening to WHFR Dearborn. And for the next hour, we will be exploring the mysteries of the UFO and abduction phenomenon. And our guest today is Mr. Ryan Wood. Mr. Wood is regarded as a leading authority on the top secret classified Magic 12 intelligence documents, as well as the retrieval of crashed UFOs. He is the author of Magic Eyes Only, Earth's Encounters with Extraterrestrial Technology. A frequent lecturer on the subject, Ryan has taught college courses and made numerous presentations about UFOs to civic organizations at ufology conferences. He has organized 4 worldwide UFO crash retrieval symposia, and the next one is coming up in Las Vegas, Nevada, on November the 9th of this year, 2007. As a UFO researcher with MUFON, he is dedicated to unquestionable proof, improved media acceptance, and increased participation in the UFO field. And we're proud to welcome Mr. Ryan Wood. Welcome to the show, Mr. Wood.
Well, thank you. It's great to be here, and I'm looking forward to sharing thoughts with your listeners.
Very good. When did you first become interested in the UFO subject?
Oh, it's really probably when I was about 15 or so. My father was very much interested in the physics of UFOs, and his company asked him to do research into the nature of gravity control at McDonnell Douglas. Mm-hmm. And so he started a program and worked fairly heavily at that, and I became ancillarily interested in the UFO phenomenon through my father and the books that he read, and trying to understand this enigma of science, really.
Yeah. Your father being Robert Wood.
Yeah, Dr. Robert Wood, and who's been in the UFO field for quite some time, and we both have shared an investigation of the Majestic documents. Mm-hmm. And their authenticity for over the past 15 years or so.
Okay. Now, Majestic 12 documents, M-A-J-I-C, magic.
Uh-huh.
Right. Exactly what are the Magic 12 documents?
Well, MAGIC, a Military Assessment of the Joint Intelligence Committee, is the acronym that we believe stands for MAGIC. But in essence, they're a high-level group that was responsible for managing the UFO problem and the crashed UFO problem. Mm-hmm. And in general, these documents have made it to the public domain since 1984. There have been 6, 7 sources, depending upon how you count them, that have leaked documents from then till now. Some 3,500 pages in total, some of it classified top secret MAGIC or top secret MJ-12 to others that are simply interesting, correlated, sort of confidential or unmarked or unclassified.
Mm-hmm. Now, a lot of them are leaked documents, is that correct?
Yeah, I would say that the majority of these, all of these 3,500 pages are, quote, leaked. Mm. There are other declassified official documents from the National Archives and other presidential libraries which are supportive of these documents, but none of them in a smoking gun fashion the way the Majestic documents are.
Mm-hmm. So how can you tell if these, quote-unquote, leaked documents are authentic, were in the archives, were in somebody's secret drawers, and not just somebody playing tricks?
Yeah, well, that's a great question, and you have to look at it in many different dimensions. I mean, in essence, you become a question document examiner, which mm-hmm. is the legal term for what you're trying to do here. And so you look at, well, where did the documents come from? And there's nowhere really to go there. They came from an anonymous mailbox drop or mailed from such and such return address, but there's no place to find out. So then you might look at the forensics of the paper and ink. What everybody believes is that these are just photocopies, when in reality there is a large collection of original documents, original paper, original ink, original annotations in the margin, original watermarks. So there's about 400 pages of original documents that you can sink your teeth into and do the forensic work to show that they're old and government issue.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, that work has been done and shows those two factors, or facts, that they are, in fact, old and government issue.
Government issue. But that doesn't mean that they were necessarily
real
documents. It could have been somebody in the... I know I was in the Army, and we used to write up orders for the guy in the next office to send, you know, I was in Germany, and we'd write up orders to send a guy to Vietnam. And then we'd have a good laugh about that.
Yeah, I understand. And I'll come back to that concept of, you know, disinformation or faking them or the other ways to tell whether or not some document is real besides the provenance and the forensic is to look at the content. You know, what do the documents say? Are the dates and times and the references within the documents internally consistent? Is the handwriting, if there's any handwriting, the signatures correct and consistent with all the other known examples of that handwriting? Although that's challenging at times because they're photocopies, and without originals you can't do much handwriting.
You don't have the paper itself to test the paper, right?
Well, in some cases, we do have the paper to test the paper.
Oh, you
but,
do?
That's what I mentioned earlier. We have about 400 pages of original.
Oh, okay.
Documents.
Yeah, that's
And so those are some of the major ways to test whether or not the document is real and authentic. And then you get to this notion of, well, could it be faked? And then you have to think about a couple of different scenarios. One is, this is this the fakery of an amateur?
Hmm.
Is this some garage ufologist having a good laugh? And the answer is unequivocally no, given the fact that the trajectory of time from 1984 to present, or to 2002, which was the last one, is so long, and there seems to be so many different apparent legitimate sources, you know, from Wisconsin to Big Bear Lake to mailbox drops in Los Angeles, and the depth and breadth of all that knowledge is so big that for somebody to create this material out of whole cloth is sort of beyond the pale.
Right.
And so then you're left with the fact that, you know, okay, so some gifted amateur can't do this. Could the KGB do it?
Hmm.
Could the CIA do it? Could MI6 do it? And the answer is yes. I think that those significant and sophisticated intelligence agencies, if motivated, could, in fact, create fakes of such sophistication and interrelationships over such a long period of time, and voice them on the public or the UFO community.
Well, let's talk a minute about the content of the MJ-12. Well, what is it about the content? What do these documents say that make them so intriguing to ufology?
Well, we could spend hours talking about that, but I'll just take a couple.
Yeah, basically.
One particular one is the Extraterrestrial Entities and Technology Recovery and Disposal Manual, stamped Top Secret MJ-12, or Top Secret Magic Eyes Only. And this is a how-to manual. It says the scope of this manual, its purpose is to present all aspects of Majestic 12 so authorized personnel will have a better understanding of the goals of the group, be able to more expertly deal with unidentified flying objects, extraterrestrial technology and entities, and increase the efficiency of future operations.
Hmm.
And so it goes through in some 32 pages the details of what to do with a crashed UFO, how to package up the materials and send it off to various bases, what extraterrestrials are there, the biological entities type 1 and 2, the types of various craft. So it's very clear that there's hardware, there's alien beings, that this is of extreme importance.
How do they describe the alien beings, types 1 and 2? Because it's my understanding that there's all kinds of types out there.
Well, I think this manual is written in 1954.
Oh, right, right. They're just getting started, basically.
Yeah, maybe. But they have two types, type 1 and type 2. Type 1, these entities are humanoid and might be mistaken for human beings of an oriental race if seen from a distance.
Hmm.
They are bipedal, 5 feet 5 inches in height, weigh 80 to 100 pounds. Proportionally, they are similar to humans, although the cranium is somewhat larger and more rounded. The skin is pale, chalky yellow in color, thick and slightly pebbled in appearance. The eyes are small, wide-set, almond-shaped with brownish-black irises and very large pupils. The whites of the eyes are not like that of humans, but have a pale gray cast. The ears are small and set low in the skull. The nose is thin and long. The mouth is wider than the humans and nearly lipless. And it goes on for a couple more sentences.
All right.
So that's a little bit different than your classic gray.
Yeah.
Now, type 2 is more of the classic gray.
Hmm.
Are different from humanoid, but differ from type 1 in many respects. They are bipedal, 3 feet 5 inches to 4 feet 2 inches in height, weigh 25 to 50 pounds. Proportion of the head is much larger than humans and type 1 EVEs, the cranium being much larger and elongated. The eyes are very large, slanted, and nearly wrapped around the side of the skull. They are black with no whites showing. So this is the more traditional image that we see.
Right.
The gray alien.
Right, right. That's right. So, and yet the type 1 that they describe back there isn't really like the Nordics, as they call them, where they look exactly like we humans.
No, no. Yeah, they clearly would be perceived as this person is not human. So, but this is 1954 thinking, to the best of our understanding.
What about the Eisenhower document? Our listeners may not be familiar with this Eisenhower document. Tell us what that was, and is it authentic? Do you think it's authentic? Can you prove it's authentic? Which is kind of hard, but
yeah,
give us a shot at that.
Yeah, the Eisenhower briefing document, which Stan Friedman has done a lot of investigation and analysis about its authenticity, was again developed or leaked as undeveloped Triax film, the way the Special Operations Manual was, to Jamie Chanderay, a sort of Hollywood producer in Los Angeles in 1984. And the title of this is It's Top Secret, Magic Eyes Only, Subject Operation Majestic 12, Preliminary Briefing for President-elect Eisenhower, dated 18 November 52. And it says the Operation Majestic 12 is a top secret research and development intelligence organization responsible directly and only to the President of the United States. So this is a research and development slash intelligence operation. So that's and then they have a list of names which turn out to be accurate and gives a little history. It's a like a six-page document or so. And it's been studied extensively, I would say, on balance. I'm fairly confident that it's authentic. I'd probably give it to 87%
probability. Huh?
Probability.
Yeah, and this was also a leaked document, correct?
Yep, leaked document is undeveloped film.
Right.
And it came in 84, and 10 years later, in 94, came the Special Operations Manual. And then later on, more.
Yeah. So this briefing document from Truman to Eisenhower said, look, now that you're going to take over the presidency, there's a little something I've got to tell you.
Yeah.
That wasn't a weather balloon back then. It was a crash disk. There were bodies. And we don't know what they're all about. And did they give a reason for secrecy? Did Truman give Eisenhower a reason for secrecy?
Well, that's a good question, and I haven't really can't cite something specific in this particular document. In general, the reason for keeping it secret back then is that this has potential huge national security implications, be it one for technological prowess and military superiority, and let's not let the Soviets get any of this stuff because it offers a tremendous leg up on other nations. And then also the unknown of how would the public react to this sort of material and truth back certainly in 52 or the mid-50s, the height of the Cold War.
Especially in 47. I mean, I keep mentioning that 1947 was 9 short years after Orson Welles' War of the Worlds radio broadcast.
Right.
And they know how that went over like a lead pipe in a glass factory, so they didn't want to chance it. Right.
Yeah, and it's a giant unknown as to how the public would react back then, and I would say it's a giant unknown today how religious organizations would react and, to some extent, how some of the public would react.
I will agree that the world conventional wisdom and paradigm, there'll be a big paradigm shift. But at the same time, I think the polls show, and I believe the polls from people I've talked to, is that even if they're skeptical now, how would you react? Well, that's the way it is. That's the way it is.
Yeah,
no big deal.
The question is, what do you tell them? If you say there's aliens out there in the universe, and they've come here, and a couple have crashed, and we have some material, they may say, well, that's no big deal.
Right.
But then when you say, well, how long have you had this material, and what have you done with it?
Yeah, we've been hiding it.
Yeah.
We'll continue this conversation shortly, but right now I'm afraid I have to take a short break and remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM. It's the station making waves, and I'm David Twitchell. This is We Are Not Alone. We're speaking with Ryan Wood, and we will be back with a short sighting of local interest. And then we'll get right back with our special guest, that is, Ryan Wood. So please stick around.
You and I haven't shaken hands yet. We've never chatted at a party. Our kids play different sports.
But I can honestly say, without ever having met you,
I'll help save your life.
Your support could save a life. When you help the American Red Cross, you help America. Call 1-800-RED-CROSS or visit redcross.org today.
Are you an HFCC college student looking for a particular textbook? How about writing utensils, paper, or Henry Ford apparel? You can find it all at the Henry Ford College Store. The College Store carries textbooks, supplies, clothing, and the most widely used classroom software. Staff members are always on hand to help you out. The College Store is located on the main campus in Dearborn, right next to the Facilities Management Building. For more information on the Henry Ford College Store, call them at 313-845-9603 or visit them online at www.hfcc.edu to order textbooks and quick study guides. The Henry Ford College Store has everything that you need to succeed.
Just Dan, Big Band with Dan has a new day and time. Now hear all your favorite big band tunes Monday afternoons from 2 to 4 p.m. Only on WHFR.FM, the station that's making waves.
This is a station that's making waves, WHFR.FM, 89.3 on your radio, and WHFR.FM on your computer. And I'm David Twitchell. You're listening to We Are Not Alone. And here we have a sighting of local interest here. This one's from Saginaw, Michigan. It occurred on October 12, 2007, at approximately 10:20 p.m. The witness states, I was watching TV in my living room when a bright light caught my eye coming from outside the window in an adjacent bedroom. It was as if something flashed across the sky. I quickly got up and ran over to the window to investigate. Initially, when I looked out, I couldn't see anything, but it was when I looked straight up that I saw it. The object that I saw was triangular-shaped with several white lights on it, 4 to 7, I'd say. It was extremely low, moving at a steady but slow pace. I was able to track it from one end of the house to looking out the window on the other end of the house for about 45 seconds. I would say it was flashing about as low as a crop duster plane would, if not lower. I heard absolutely no sound from the object. There is a small airport nearby, and I often hear planes fly over that are much higher than this object, end quote. So, if you've had a similar sighting, these triangular-shaped craft are seen a lot today, along with the typical disc-shaped craft. But if you see anything that doesn't look like it belongs in our sky, please contact Michigan MUFON. You can go to Michigan MUFON at mimufon.org and report your sighting. And an investigator will pick that up and investigate it further. And you can also go to the International MUFON at mimufon.com. Now, MUFON is a nonprofit organization dedicated to the scientific study of the UFO phenomenon. And now I'd like to get back to our guest, Mr. Ryan Wood, the author of Magic Eyes Only. Tell us a little bit about, first of all, you're going to have a symposium in beautiful Las Vegas. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right.
Is this number 5? I believe it's number
5. The fifth, yeah.
The fifth one.
Fifth annual UFO Crash Retrieval Symposium in November 9th through the 11th at the Tuscany Suites Hotel and Casino. It's a great location. We have 14 talks scheduled over the 2.5 days. In my opinion, the talks are tighter, crisper, and better speakers than what's at MUFON, and more focused.
When you say tighter, what does that mean?
That means that the presentations are shorter.
Oh.
They're delivered more crisply.
Okay.
And the speakers are better speakers.
They don't drone on, huh?
They don't drone on. I mean, the people are given 50 minutes and 5 minutes of forced Q&A. No hour and a half, hour and 45-minute talks that can get...
Well, now, I was at a MUFON symposium, and in fact, I spoke at a MUFON symposium, and they only really allowed 1 hour, as I remember.
This last year, they had several talks that were an hour and a half.
Okay. This was in 2003 I spoke.
Yeah.
And I thought maybe they only allowed me an hour where they allowed everybody else an hour and a half.
Yeah. Now, it's the theme really for this year's conference is to focus on some things that will foster and support a disclosure. Not that I believe that I think the government will ever tell the truth. It's that I'll have to drag it out of them kicking and screaming.
Uh-huh. You think you can do that?
What?
Do you think you can do that, Ryan?
Drag it out of them kicking?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I think I can.
Well, I hope you are successful because I've been touting UFO disclosure for, well, ever since I've been in the business, shall we say.
Well, the question is what would constitute disclosure, and in my mind, there's only three things that would constitute disclosure.
Hmm.
One is pulling up crashed hardware, clearly extraterrestrial, out of the ground and putting it on national news and international news and having it scientifically validated. And that would truly begin to open the kimono.
Hmm.
Two would be pulling documents out of the National Archives that are truly smoking guns. I mean, they talk about extraterrestrials, they talk about government involvement, that show a history and a pattern of deep involvement, clandestine involvement in this topic, and that would create a giant firestorm for them. I think the documents are there. They don't know what they have, and our challenge is that we don't know where to find it either.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third thing would be something out of control of everyone, and that is the ETs choosing to land and say, hey, we are here, mm-hmm. and we've been here, and furthermore, here's a machine that will tell you the truth of what's really happened.
Mm-hmm. What do you mean a machine?
Well, I'm thinking that several of the reports by abductees or is that they've seen visions of the future and visions of the past.
Right.
And you imagine having a television screen mm-hmm. where you just type, you know, anything into it, and it shows you the truth.
You know, it's like a time machine, but you just watch it.
Yeah, it's a time machine that just shows you the truth of what happened.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and
that would be something.
That would be something.
I would love to see it.
Yeah, exactly. But
it could
so
make
I think
a TV
that would be highly destabilizing for the government cabal that's running the show.
They could make a TV series out of it. Right?
Yeah.
You think Journeyman is good? I didn't like that show.
I'm not sure I ever saw it.
Oh, they just showed it once, but guy goes back in time. That's a problem with time travel stories. There are so many paradoxes that have to be solved. You just can't solve them, really. To my way of thinking.
Yeah, well, it's the difference between traveling in time and just seeing the truth.
Right, right.
But you also mentioned my book, Magic Eyes Only.
Right.
And, you know, this book's available on Amazon. You can get it on my website, magiceyesonly.com.
Mm-hmm.
And it reviews 74 UFO crashes from around the world from mm-hmm. 1897 to present. It ranks them, rates them, footnotes them, reference them. It is a tremendous reference source for UFO crashes.
Mm. Okay.
And that's its focus.
Now, the crashes, the debris thereof,
mm-hmm.
do we have any of that? I mean, do you have any of that? Does anybody who's coming to this conference have anything they can say, well, you want physical evidence, here you are, here's a chunk out of the Roswell debris.
And the answer is we had crash parts at the first crash con, the second crash con, the third crash con. We didn't have any at the fourth, but we're going to try to have them at the fifth.
Okay, and what kind of debris, though?
Well, the debris varies in quality, sophistication, and sort of weirdness from Linda Howe's bismuth magnesium layered part, which is highly anomalous and weird,
mm-hmm.
and it's been tested at Sandia National Laboratories and a variety of national labs, and every 15 angstroms there's a different layer of bismuth and magnesium back and forth.
You know,
can't be manufactured on Earth, according to the scientists. Nobody knows what it's good for.
Yeah.
And so you can't really, and you can't manufacture it here, so you can't make a profit at it. So in essence, it's interesting, but it doesn't cause any commercial impact.
Coincidentally, I did an article on it was called "Anomalies Found in Roswell Metal," and it's been on several sites and in a magazine. But the bottom line is, I got with Levengood. I actually saw this piece, but he told me not to touch it. He doesn't want my energies going in, I guess. You know what I'm saying?
Well, which piece was it?
Well, I believe we're speaking about the same piece. Biophysicist W.C. Levengood got this chunk of metal from Linda Moulton Howe.
Oh, okay.
And he examined it, and I was in his laboratory, and he says, now you can look at it, but don't touch it. Don't touch it. I go, why do you want me to touch it? I don't want
to. That's kind of ridiculous. I mean, I held it in my hand.
Yeah. Okay.
Took photos. We all lined up.
Yeah. Know? Well, you know, God love Levengood, but he's a funny guy.
Yeah.
And I don't care what. I hope he's not listening right now. But I don't care what you say to him. you mean it's this way and that way? No. It's that way and this way, which comes out to be the same thing as what I just said, you know?
Yeah.
But he found something interesting in it. He would have said so, and very honestly. But he said that this thing just can't be explained. I know scientists want to be the ones that say, I can explain that. You know, I'm a scientist. The public looks to me for answers, and I have to give it to them. Unfortunately, they give them answers that don't fit the data. To Levengood's credit and to yours, some scientists will say, you know what? This is a real head-scratcher. I can't give you an answer. I don't know what this is made of. And then, like with Dr. Lear, Roger Lear, we had on the show a while back here.
He has parts of yeah. material.
Okay, yeah. And he's got these implants that he was very skeptical to begin with. What a bunch of nonsense. He takes this foreign object out. It's all kinds of different anomalies about it. And then when they check it out, they find alloys that cannot be manufactured on Earth, just like you were saying.
And Lear has a piece of also allegedly the Roswell crash, mm-hmm. too, which he's had analyzed, and it's relatively odd, but the amount of analysis that's been done is much more limited than Linda Howe's piece.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's Chuck Wade, who has parts, and then there's Ramey Baca that has parts from the Nogal Canyon crash, and then there's the Aurora, Texas crash that John Schuessler has parts from. So there's lots of physical evidence around.
Right.
And
if people choose to look at it, right?
Yeah, exactly.
That is the problem. We just had Stanton Friedman here at the college in September, doing a lecture, and I've talked to a couple of skeptics, you know, what a bunch of nonsense. And I say, here, I'm going to give you a ticket to see Stanton Friedman. Spend 2 hours of your life looking at the evidence and then draw your own conclusion. They never showed up. See, it can't exist. Why should I waste my time looking at the evidence?
Yeah.
Is that scientific or what? I don't know.
No, it's not scientific.
Not a bit.
You can't throw away the data of science.
That's
science is about data and hypothesis and testing those hypotheses.
Right.
And that's the scientific method.
But so many of these debunkers / skeptics, which I think there's a difference between the two, but they give you an explanation that does not include all of the elements of the evidence.
Mm-hmm.
And when you challenge them to do so, they simply ignore you. At any rate, I'm going to take a short break here to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM. Station Making Waves. I'm David Twitchell. You're listening to We Are Not Alone. We're speaking with Ryan Wood, author of Magic Eyes Only, and the head of the Crash Retrieval Symposia in Las Vegas, Nevada, coming up on November 9th. There's still time to get your tickets to that and to go to his website. And where will they go to that website? What website?
Oh, the Crash Conference.
Crash Conference, yeah.
Yeah, the UFOconference.com has all the details of the schedule and the speakers.
Mm-hmm.
We have the lineup of all the talks. Some of the key big speakers are Stephen Bassett and Richard Dolan and Linda Moulton Howe, mm-hmm. Antonio Huneas, Danny Sheehan, myself, my father. But we can talk more about what we're talking about individually later on if you want.
Okay, that'll be fine. In fact, I will let you lead the conversation when we come right back. And once again, WHFR, WHFR.FM, Making Waves, and we'll be right back. Please, do not go away.
Mommy, you should take the time and do a lot just to keep me safe. Knee pads, baby gates, corner cushions, socket covers, and that fancy car seat for big girls like me. Where'd you find that thing?
The odds of a child being in a fatal car accident are 1 in 23,000. Highly unlikely, but it's still worth untangling those buckles time after time. Well, there's something out there that untangling buckles won't protect a child from, and that something is autism. The odds of a child being diagnosed with autism are 1 in 166. That's right. 1 in 166 children will be diagnosed with an autism spectrum disorder. And one of those could be your child. Knowing what to look for and catching it early could make a world of difference to your child and you.
So, Mom, while you're remembering to protect me from the unthinkable, don't dismiss the possible.
To learn the signs of autism and what to do, go to AutismSpeaks.org. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Did you know that there is a huge shortage of nurses in America today, and that number is expected to grow as more baby boomer nurses retire? Who will take care of us when we are sick? If you are the nurturing type and really want to make a difference in people's lives, why not look into a group on campus called the Student Nurse Association? Henry Ford Community College takes pride that the first established associate's degree nursing program started right here in 1953. If you want to be part of that respected program, the Student Nurse Association can help you. They've set up a needy nurse fund which helps nursing students who are in financial trouble. By doing this, they're able to supply uniforms and books for qualified students. To get more information on this important organization, call 313-845-9635. It could be you who saves a life.
Listen to the Mrs. Robinson Show on Sundays from 10 until midnight on the station that's making waves, WHFR.FM. Charge your batteries with the best in indie, electronic, and space rock on the Mrs. Robinson Show, Sundays from 10 until midnight.
Okay, you're listening to WHFR.FM, station making waves. Of course, we've already said that, haven't we? Okay, let's get back with our special guest today, Mr. Ryan Wood. There's at the Crash Retrieval Symposium in beautiful Las Vegas, Nevada, an opportunity to not only see the evidence, hear about the evidence from the data from the scientists who know their stuff about it, but a chance to have some great buffets and a lot of fun gambling. So, am I right?
The schedule's pretty tight. People have to stay up late to gamble, probably.
Well, you know what? If it were me, I'd get there a couple days early. And, of course, it's kind of late now, this being aired first Saturday in November. But it's late to get a couple days late.
Yeah,
it was me.
Yeah,
I stay a week late. But at any rate, this Matthew Williams will speak on some whistleblower by the name of Gary McKinnon, and I've heard about him on CNN News. And can you fill us in on that guy?
Yeah, Gary McKinnon, in 2001, successfully hacked into a military computer, I think at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. I suspect it was probably a low-level computer or something that was not very well-protected and not very important.
Mm-hmm.
But he nevertheless did it and got access to an alleged list of extraterrestrial liaison officers, which seemed an odd thing, and checked the names of these people and allegedly the extraterrestrial craft or these ship names that were going in and out, and couldn't find any ship names in the U.S. Navy about this. And the assumption is that they're somehow spaceships that are going back and forth to some other place.
Could not be code names for ships, could it?
Well, sure, it could be code names for ships. It could be a lot of different things. But what makes it so interesting is that because he did this and sort of talked about it, the U.S. and the people, the military and the U.S. got really pissed and convinced the British government that they ought to go arrest him, and they did, and threw him in jail, but he made bail, and eventually wound its way through the courts and before a magistrate in the UK, and the judge said, well, okay, so he hacked into this computer, what harm did he do?
Right.
And the prosecution and the government, the U.S. government said, well, we can't tell you, it's classified. And the judge said, well, you know, if you're not going to tell me what he did, then forget it. I'm throwing it out of court.
this was the UK government, correct?
It's the UK government with the UK citizen saying, you know, and very reasonably so in my mind, that if you can't charge this man with something we can talk about, then and establishing some sort of harm, then I'm not going to detain him or put him in jail. And he was released. But then the U.S. government, you know, said, well, if you're going to be that way, we're going to fight for him for extradition, and went through an extradition process, which they're still working on. Because the U.K. government doesn't have what they call a FISA, Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, which is a secret court, a top secret court, where you can go before a tribunal of judges and in secret hear secret charges against you that aren't public, that you do not have a...
So in other words, whatever he got into there was so secret they couldn't even tell the judge.
That's right. They couldn't tell the judge.
That's very similar to Stanton Friedman's asking for these UFO documents, and they said, well, we can't give it to it because it's too secret. Well, the judge says, just show me what it is that's so secret. No, we can't even show you what it is that's so secret.
And so they wrote a justification as to why, and then they declassified it.
Right.
And
then they covered it up. And then they blacked out the affidavit.
Yeah.
Friedman had to fight for the affidavit.
Right.
But so it's not Gary McKinnon that's going to be there, but this Matthew Williams, is that correct?
Matthew Williams, who's investigated the case and is one of the most familiar people with this action and saga and the current state of affairs.
Mm-hmm.
So that's sort of a fresh new thing. My father's going to talk about the Encyclopedia of Flying Saucers, the Bowen manuscript, which is one of the original documents, original onion skin paper ink, stamped top secret magic.
Mm-hmm.
And he's going to go through what the document shows and some of the handwritten notes on the side and in the margins are the most interesting and engaging.
Right.
They have notes like, you know, what is Don Menzel doing, or what is DM doing, and it's referring to Don Menzel. Or
Don Menzel, then, is?
Don Menzel is a Harvard astronomer that was mentioned in the Eisenhower briefing document, a big anti-UFO proponent, wrote several anti-UFO books, yet at the same time seems to be deeply embedded inside the disinformation and Majestic 12 program.
Can't have it both ways, can you?
Well, that's true. You either you're lying one way or the other.
That's right. That's right. Make up your mind.
And that's going to be a lot of fun, because there's lots of details. It's a very well-written book, never published, written by Vernon Bowen, who wrote children's books for 6 or 7 years. Mm-hmm. It was submitted to the Air Force in 1955, and for review in 1960. And then in 1999, mm-hmm. 39 years later, it mm-hmm. comes out of the system with the postmark of Army Freedom of Information right. Office at Fort Meade.
Now, it's not only the, as far as documents are concerned, it's not only the MJ-12 documents, which some people are saying, they're all hoax, and some of them are hoax. You can't tell the difference between the hoax ones and non-hoax ones. Well, it's not only those, but if someone said to you, if this UFOs were real, the government and Air Force would have documents on them other than MJ-12, what would you say to them?
Oh, they do. I mean, you look in Project Blue Book, for example, mm-hmm. and there's, this is, thousands of pages all having to do with UFOs and their investigation of UFOs and low-level activities. My impression is that these are high-quality sightings mm-hmm. that are investigated, but the really juicy crash retrieval stuff has been extracted and pulled from that process.
Well, that was J. Allen Hynek's big complaint with Project Blue Book. He was one of the honest scientists that, although very skeptical and said this is a bunch of nonsense, that's why they picked him to head Project Blue Book. And then he realized all the really convincing cases were not coming their way. He said, he brought this to the attention of his boss, who said, listen, your job is to say this doesn't exist. Find a way to say this doesn't exist. And that's why, what was the name of it? The first one? Grudge or Sign? Wasn't it Sign?
Well, so Project Sign was first, and then yeah. Project Grudge, and then Project Blue Book.
Right. And people in Project Sign didn't understand their mission. They thought their mission was to investigate the UFO phenomenon and make a conclusion on it. And they concluded this is real and not visionary and not fantastic. It was real. And they said, no, that you don't seem to understand. That wasn't your mission. The mission was debunk it.
Yeah.
And up comes, Hynek gets out of Project Blue Book for just that reason. Spent the rest of his life trying to show the world that it's a true phenomenon. Well, am I correct?
Yeah.
Do I have my facts straight here?
Yes, you do.
And now it's your purpose in life to show the evidence.
Uh-huh.
And I think you've been doing a darn good job since then.
Yeah, well,
since you started. And you mentioned your dad, Dr. Robert Wood.
Yeah, he's giving a talk about the Bowen manuscript. Hmm. Some of the other people that Peter Robbins is giving a talk on UFO and alien-related imagery in advertising.
Mm-hmm.
And there's actually a fairly big theme that I have this year. I have, I think, 3 talks related to advertising and desensitization of children with alien images and trying to better understand how the media is either being manipulated or used and how the public is being manipulated and used with the alien theme. And we'll explore the nature of that in detail with Peter Robbins' talk and Karen Dolan's talk mm-hmm. and Terry Hansen, who wrote Missing Times.
Missing Times.
Missing Times, which is...
It's a periodical?
No, that was a book, hardback book called Missing Times.
Huh.
And he's talking about news management in the wake of a UFO crash.
Mm-hmm. Because
so he's doing a good job on on that. So
whose book was first, Bud Hopkins' Missing Time or this guy's Missing Times?
good question. I don't know the answer. The Missing Times is, a takeoff of Missing New York Times.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So it's all about news management and manipulation with relationship to UFOs.
Coincidentally, we're going to have Bud Hopkins on our show in December. So that should be interesting. He's the author of Intruders and Missing Times and Witnessed, which I think Witness, I love that book.
Missing Time, isn't it?
Missing Time, yeah.
Yeah.
Missing Time.
Yeah, like you're missing an hour or two versus
right.
missing the New York Times with not doing the job.
Right, going out on your porch and saying, the darn guy didn't bring it again.
Yeah.
So, what was I going to say now about Bud Hopkins? And it doesn't matter, but he'll be on in December, first Saturday of December. So, we'll talk about him. But, so the evidence, the documents, I should say, the documents are there. And not just leaked documents, but declassified documents, documents that have been pried out of the hands of the archivists, et cetera, et cetera. Is that what you're saying?
Well, there are supporting documents from the National Archives
mm-hmm.
that, suggest deep concern and interest with UFOs and their technology. So,
mm-hmm.
But they're not smoking gun and highly compelling.
Well, now
these are.
If the UFO phenomenon were just a bunch of nonsense, why would they be concerned with their technology?
That's a great question.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the answer is they must be deeply concerned with it. Otherwise, they wouldn't spend the time, resource, and money to pursue. The investigation, analysis, and further study of the phenomenon.
But some of these documents, the average listener out here now can just put in a Freedom of Information Act and get their hands on some of them, or do they have to wait for years like Friedman did?
Well, it depends on what you're talking about, but the easiest thing to do would be to simply just log into majesticdocuments.com and read some of the leaked material.
Right.
That's the.
But a lot of people are going to say, "Oh, yeah, you can put that up on the website." But how do I know he really got this from?
You can go to a different link, officially released documents on majesticdocuments.com, and you can see, hundreds of pages that have been officially declassified, and they're cited in reference to the National Archives and Record Group 319 and entries and box numbers. And,
right.
So you can verify that, too.
We've been speaking with Ryan Wood, author of Magic Eyes Only. And once again, give us your tell us where they can go for
You can get my book, hardback book, 328 pages, Magic Eyes Only, on Amazon, or you can get it on my website.
Which is?
Magic, M-A-J-I-C, eyesonly.com.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can... get my phone number off the website and call me up and, place an order directly.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you want to go visit this year's Crash Retrieval Conference or look at the details associated with who's talking and when that's all happening, is look at UFOconference.com, and you can see the details of registration and hotel and all that stuff.
Very good. And I'd like to get your dad on the show, too, one of these days.
Oh, yeah, we can do that.
Okay, I'll work that out with you. Mr. Ryan Wood, thank you so much for joining us today.
All right, thanks.
Okay, good luck with the crash retrieval business.
All right.
And in the conference. And if you have any questions or comments for me, you can write to me. You can email me at dtwitchell@hotmail.com. I also call the studio, WHFR studio, at area code 313-845-9676, or email at WHFR@hfcc.edu. please visit my website at ufoimplications.com. That's ufoimplications.com. And I watch the TV version of We Are Not Alone in the Downriver area on Channel 20, Comcast Cable only, on Tuesdays at 6, repeated at 10 p.m. And please stay tuned to WHFR for the best in alternative music. And I want to thank you for joining us. And please join us again on the first Saturday of each month and repeated the next day at... Okay, first Saturday each month is at 10 a.m. Repeated the next day at 5 p.m. when we will again explore the mysteries of the UFO phenomenon. Until then, this is David Twitchell wishing all our loyal listeners a safe and happy Thanksgiving and reminding you to keep an eye on the sky.
If you want to change the world, then you have to change yourself. One of the best places in the Metro Detroit area to improve your life is Henry Ford Community College. Henry Ford Community College offers dozens of degree and certificate programs, plus the opportunity to network with your peers and potential employers. Taking classes at Henry Ford Community College gives you the freedom to take your own career path and opens up an infinite number of career possibilities. Additionally, day and evening classes allow you the flexibility of building a schedule tailored to your busy lifestyle. So change the world, change yourself at Henry Ford Community College. For more information on admittance and financial aid and class schedules, call the Henry Ford Community College toll-free number at 1-800-585-HFCC. Again, that's 1-800-585-HFCC.